Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
Perhaps not since the mid-1980s and Margaret Thatcher's defeat of the year-long miners' strike has there been a time when so much of the news media has shown such sustained and strident support for a tough law and order agenda. The rioters and looters of London, Birmingham and Manchester have been well and truly demonised. And it has to be said that all too often the press, television and radio became the cheerleaders, egging on politicians, urging the police and courts to deliver the severest possible crackdown. But the task of reporting the violence was not without its challenges. Journalists and photographers did not emerge unscathed. They have grave concerns about police tactics. The blanket use of images captured on closed-circuit television to identify suspects has been unprecedented. So has the increased state surveillance of social networking sites. Could their use and the operation of messaging services via mobile phones and the internet be curtailed in the future? Ministers say that's not their intention. Here to discuss the disturbances and the many repercussions are a broadcaster, a photographer, who both have wide experience of reporting civil unrest, and a commentator on media tactics. Let's start with their opening assessment. Alex Pascal, you're a very well-respected voice of the Caribbean community, a presenter of the radio programme Black Londoners. You've experienced wide experience of similar unrest in the past. How do you think the media responded to the riots of August 2011?
Let me treat Britain as a media and say that putting on a blindfold will blank us all out of the reality of what is happening. And this has been the attitude of Britain in looking at turmoils and in particular race and other things. I say that because there is a pressure today on the black politician, there's a pressure today on the politicians, the media, and people to tell the truth as it is. So I think we are all under question as to what is facts and what is fiction.
But were the media a player to a greater extent in the rioting of the recent weeks than in the past?
We have a bigger media today. In my time, it was just cables and a microphone. Today, you don't have that. You have the camera everywhere. You have the government surveillance everywhere. And it depends on how the photographer will tell you how to shoot the picture, how we shoot the picture and how we report the picture and what the picture captures. I'll give you one instance that I heard the other evening, which I think is mighty, and I hope the photographer will talk about it. A man who was a real reporter with a camera covered down, fearing that he might be seen as a rioter. And he had to go to the police quickly to say, well, I am a reporter, in case you have me on camera.
Well, that gets directly to Jess Hurd, a photographer with considerable frontline experience of recent demonstrations. You are also the chair of the London Photographers Branch of the National Union of Journalists. What do you think, then, Jess Hurd, of the media's treatment of the riots?
I mean, I've got concerns. Obviously, I was on the ground covering events, so I wasn't listening to or reading the media during those 4 days. But the coverage, in its way being so biased, has really affected us and will impact on our safety. It was already a very dangerous atmosphere to work on the front line because of the distrust of the media and the, you know, I'd forgotten how many times now we were asked about the hacking scandal on the ground in the riots. You know, we were implicated with the corruption of the police and the politicians, unfortunately, the media, and we need to put that right. I think meetings, we had a meeting last week with our NUJ colleagues about how we reported events. I think actually we need to go back into the communities with the local media and the national media in Tottenham, in Hackney, in Manchester, and get out and talk to people and really get their stories, because I think that is completely missing from the equation here. I mean, it was no surprise to me that it kicked off in this way. I mean, it's been a tinderbox on my estate in East London for the last, you know, 6 or so months, where they've been using dispersal zones phones for the kids, and the, you know, raft of other issues.
Well, Jess Hurd paints a pretty bleak picture. Tim Gopsill, as a former editor of The Journalists, you've written many assessments in the past of the way the media, the news media, has reported demonstrations and protests. Were you alarmed by the way the media responded?
Well, I wasn't surprised, to be honest, because the turmoil was on such a scale, it was a gift, really. I thought the tone of the coverage was set by Kelvin McKenzie. He's the former editor of The Sun and one of the most influential figures in journalism for the last 20 years. And I saw he was on Newsnight and he was asked, do you think we should try to understand why these people are rioting? And Kelvin McKenzie said, no, I don't think we should. And that was the attitude of a lot of media who simply regarded it, who took up a vengeful position, whipping up a reaction of hatred against the people on the streets. Well, the result of that is just going to make things worse. But having said that, we also do have to say there was some very good journalism. The work of the photographers, particularly, like Jess, and a lot of TV crews, and in papers like The Guardian, where they had people out on the streets, and also in some local papers, where despite all the cutbacks in staffing that they've had and everything over recent years, a lot of them absolutely set up 24-hour newsrooms and put everybody they had out on the streets. So there was some good, but there was a lot more bad.
Now, as a broadcaster myself, the question that people put to me was that television was perhaps to blame, that there was a lot of copycat action going on. Now, Alex Pascal, you can speak with some authority on this issue. Do you feel, for example, that the live television coverage encouraged young people, alerted them to take part?
If you give people, Muhammad Ali would tell you that, put a camera in front of me and I'll perform. So that's what it is. And what the young people do know, and people think that they don't know, is that their faces could be captured.
They didn't know that?
No. The young people are somewhat aware of the electronic media. That's why they come out covering their faces. That's why some of them went back home and changed to come out in different clothing. They are not afraid. They have said, and I listened to many meetings I've been to, we have nothing to lose. What do we care? As a matter of fact, what we get out of this is something good. Idle hands with nothing to do will find something to do. And this is what is going on at the moment. When you have a people that you will not educate or bring into society, they feel left out of society. I've watched troops of animals do the same thing. Though we might be the higher animal, we'll behave the same way.
Well, let's ask Jess Hurd, you as a photographer out there on the street, what was your impression of the impact of the way that this was being reported, that it was live on television 24 hours during those rioting days?
Well, I mean, covering when we went down to cover the Tottenham disturbances, everyone was coming up and asking, do you know why we're here? Do you know why we're here? Really wanting to get their reasons for being there across, and actually quite aggressive initially, because it's like, well, you're only here when it's on fire. You're only here when it's on fire. And, you know, luckily, I have actually covered events in Tottenham and Wood Green across North London, and so I've known since Joy Gardner was murdered by immigration police. I've covered all the events, Roger Sylvester, you know, all the deaths in police custody, so I could actually talk to people and talk them down, really, but actually find a level at which this is why we're here. And it was a question of race and class.
Yeah. Let's put this point to Tim Gopsill. Tim Gopsill, you mentioned your concerns about some of the press coverage. What was your impression of the fact that we had 24-hour news coverage to a depth and a degree that we haven't seen before over such a prolonged period of civil unrest?
Well, they obviously had a lot of time to fill, and one of the worst things was the way that the effects of the riots were reported, not on the rioters or on their communities, but on kind of displaced, affected middle-class people. So people were being interviewed who couldn't get home because the road was blocked or something. And everybody wanted to know about these poor people going home, but nobody wanted to know what the people people who were actually rioting were doing. I must say, since, and now that things have calmed down a bit and there's a lot of analysis going on, there are some pretty good programs on TV where kids are being interviewed and are having a voice. But at the time, what the media were interested in was the effect on everybody else, not what had caused it.
Now let's move on to another issue, which is the way in which closed circuit television was used and is now, of course, being used by the police to identify suspects and has led to this phenomenal number of arrests. Now, we just heard a moment ago Tim Gopsell from Alex Pascal making the point that perhaps a lot of the youngsters were not totally aware of the reach of modern closed-circuit television. What do you think of the way in which the newspapers have almost glorified in using these pictures that the police have been issuing?
Well, I think they are aware of it, which is why they wear hoodies, isn't it? Unfortunately, it seems the hoodies didn't work very well this time. Perhaps they have cameras that go through them or something, but obviously they've got thousands and thousands of images and they're going around rounding people up. The effect of that's going to be terrible. I mean, they're alienating a whole generation of young people in the cities. And the social effect of that, that's the worst thing about the coverage, it seems to me, is the social effect in the long run. If you disaffect a whole generation of young people, there's going to be more trouble in the future.
But the point I was trying to get you to address was what you thought of the way in which the media were glorifying in this, in the publication of these photographs.
The rogues' galleries. Well, it's dreadful, isn't it? They're just playing to the most basic instincts. They just want revenge on people, you know. It's medieval. And the result is that all these kids are being taken through the courts. They're being named, which has been against the law in the past. They're being jailed at young ages. The people even being jailed for putting stuff up on Facebook. I mean, that is just not the way to do it.
Let's get the view of Alex Pascal. You mentioned this fact that, yes, some of the youngsters were hooded, did have masks on, but clearly there must be a sense of fear now about the degree to which closed-circuit television is picking up so many people.
I mean, we can't breathe anywhere now. Closed-circuit television is on us everywhere. I mean, this recent thing, even with this, picking you up on your own mobile telephone. We're in a serious situation, and Britain better take a look in the mirror. Britain has to look in the mirror. These politicians who are making laws and doing crash by night, jail them all. It can't work. We have reached a point now where I hope that these very television pieces that is set everywhere to capture us will make all of us take a look if we need to change the society or level a society to bring it back from where it was. I go back to the time when there was the panda cars, when there was a bobby on the road, when there was some police you could talk to. You cannot talk to any police now at all. And that bothers me. Worst of all, I hope we have time to cover the black police, because as a black man, I am concerned about the black presence and how pressured they are to arrest their own black people when they come on the scene.
We'll come on in a moment to police tactics, but first, Jess Hurd, can you address this point about the impact which closed-circuit television is having on news coverage? Because what struck me as a reader of newspapers and a viewer of television is the amount of imagery from closed-circuit television, which has clearly been supplied by the police. It's almost as though it's undermining the work of photographers. What's your take?
I mean, we're the most photographed society in the world by the state and, you know, by shops, close-circuit security there. I don't think it will replace professional journalism. Its quality isn't the same.
It would influence.
It does influence. I mean, in terms of the rogue galleries, I think a clear consequence of that was what you saw it happening in Manchester, and one of the poor lads there who was caught and hauled up in court had his house, his flat burnt down, and it was a wrongful arrest. He had, you know, five witnesses to him being somewhere else entirely. I think we've got to be very careful, the media, towing the police line on this, and basically having a gallery, a criminal gallery, on their front pages, because I think it's completely wrong. I think we do need to not be evidence gatherers for the police. We need to be entirely separate.
There was retribution against the media in some places as well, in Bristol, where the evening paper carried rose galleries of people photographed on the streets. The office itself got trashed by some people, and some people might say it serves them right.
Now let's look at this question of police tactics. Jess Hurd, as a photographer, as chair of the London Photographers Branch of the NUJ, you, of course, have taken your concerns to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. That's the way in which the police have been treating photographers. What was your impression of the way in which the police behaved during these riots in London?
Well, I mean, there's a different approach, how they treated journalists and how they treated the demonstrators. In Tottenham, initially, we had quite a few problems because they were pushing us into the back streets where it was clearly unsafe. People, it was very, very tense atmosphere. And then we were allowed to basically follow the riot at the front line, as long as we didn't get too close to the police. But their tactics were... I personally think they could have halted what was happening. I think the policing was very lax in some ways. I'm not quite sure why they made those decisions, but there wasn't many police on the front line where we were. They didn't use the Section 60 or anything like that they have. They just seemed to let the place go. I'm not quite sure. Quite sure why they did that, but also they were using tactics like I thought this was very scary. I've not seen this happen before. But the police helicopters, they had it go very low at one point, and obviously the whole place is on fire, and it just creates a whirlwind fire, which could have ignited not only the media, the protesters there. It was a very dangerous situation, and I think they lost control.
But could I also ask you, Jess Hurd, about your comparisons with reporting and photographing and being a photographer at unrest here in Britain and abroad? I mean, what similarities have you picked up?
A lot of my colleagues were injured. I had to take one colleague to a hospital, had a full bottle of wine to the back of his head. A lot of our equipment was taken. I think there was a general atmosphere of distrust of the media, unless you actually start to talk to people about why you were, who you were, etc. It was very dangerous. I mean, it was as dangerous in some respects as covering the revolution in Egypt earlier in the year. Didn't have the aspect of the secret police, but it, certainly in terms of injuries on the ground, it was very dangerous.
Let's turn now to Alex Pascal. I'll come back to Tim Gobson in a moment. You've got some specific concerns then about the way the police operated and the black police officers.
I'll come into that, but I'll tell you where all this surveillance began, 1976. The riots of the Notting Hill Carnival worried the police, annoyed the police. And from then, they began to study the Notting Hill Carnival. And in 1986, I saw a surveillance set up that Mr. Condon brought on the Notting Hill Carnival that frightened me. They have more footage of people and the Notting Hill Carnival that they have studied likewise how to treat mass control of people. And from that moment, I thought to myself, the Britain that only looked at the black side has to worry itself now because it's coming on us all over. I come to the black police. A black police, woman or man, who is in the mass of white police, has to be seen to do a job. And they come like the hunting dog to capture what the white police would begin believe. Well, what you think about this, Jack? And Jack has to respond, oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. I cannot say this about all of them. But I am monitoring many of them because they are there in presence. Secretly, many of them would tell me what they're suffering at their back. They themselves cannot think with a balanced way. And I'm afraid, and I'm saying this for the world to hear it, if I see a crowd of police coming and I see a black person in it, my greatest worry and concern is that black police inside it, because whether he comes to do the arrests or he's been there to say that they treated or arrested me properly. It's a serious concern, and I'm calling on our black people in the House of Lords and governments to come and sit down with us and let's discuss this whole issue. Diane Abbott is making her thing. The youth is condemning. Oh, David Lammy is being condemned by the youth for his outrageous statements that has come out. The others remain silent in the House of Lords and Commons. We have, as a people, get rid of this minority thinking. We're in a collective problem at this moment and should all address it.
Well, that's a very serious point that you make there, and your call on black parliamentarians is quite significant. Tim Gopsall, though, looking at the wider impact of the conduct of the police, you can go back over many previous demonstrations and protests. What was your impression of the way the police related, especially to the media, during the 4 days of unrest in London and other cities?
Well, the police have got an agenda, haven't they, which is that, like a lot of other people, they're fighting budget cuts. And the main political issue that came out of the riots, actually, was the need for more police. That's the only definite thing that's come out of it. So perhaps I do wonder, or I don't wonder, why the police stood back on the first night and let it all happen, because it absolutely played into their hands, didn't it, of the argument that we need more police. And the outcome of it is likely to be that of all the cuts that the government is making, social spending and everything, the police get reprieved, spend more money on police and less on social programmes. And the media absolutely went along with that. I mean, the demand for more police was probably the clearest line in all the coverage.
Let's now look at another issue, which is the impact of social media, of the social networks, of the messaging servicing on BlackBerry, for example. Police officers that I know, who've got wide experience going back some years, they say the difference between what happened in London in August 2011 and in previous and on previous occasions was that often it went by word of mouth, in Brixton or in Lisson Grove or in Ladbroke Grove. Now, of course, because of the impact of messaging, it's possible to alert people, hey, we're going to go from Tottenham and we're going to go to Enfield, or we're going to go from Brixton down to Croydon. Let's go round our group and assess what do you think has been the impact of these new communication techniques on the young people, and what should the media be doing as a response. Alex Pastor, you start.
The first impact is that it has allowed the young people to have a say. Negative or positive, they have got a forum now to have a say in ways that they themselves cannot analyze right at this moment. What is wrong is how the authorities are taking what they say during a frenzy and turning it with the hope of imprisoning them. How many prisons would we need in Britain to contain the wealth of what has been happening? Prisons don't work. We have to find a new way of dealing with this thing. That is the big problem. No one of us here can analyze what this new modern media will do. What I like about it is it's making us all talk. It's making us all communicate with each other.
Right, well, let's turn to Jess Hurd. For the photographers, you are on the front line reporting what's going on. What was your sense? Did you feel, Jess Hurd, that there was a sort of communication system which the young people were using, which was alerting them? What was the impact for you as somebody who was trying to report what was going on?
I mean, ironically, I couldn't use Twitter on my phone during the riot, so I had no communication that way at all. I mean, to be honest, once you were in it, you were in it. And my observation was that it was very local. I don't see people went from one borough to the other. They just rioted locally. It's interesting in Egypt when they turned off the access to the internet. That didn't stop the protests, it only increased the protests. I remember talking to a group of techie guys, and they said, look, we wouldn't be here if Mubarak hadn't turned off the internet. We'd be sitting at home on Twitter, on Facebook. We have to come down to Tahrir Square because they've turned off the communication. So I think, you know, this whole debate is ridiculous, because before that, people texted. Before that, it was word of mouth or telephone. You know, we communicate. That's what we do. If the people in our society have broken that level of fear, mm-hmm. and come out onto the streets, then that's what happens. I don't think, you know, cutting the internet or Twitter or whatever is gonna work at all.
Tim Goppesall, if you put on your media commentator hat for a moment, what would you say then is the impact of social networking and the way in which it's first of all being used by young people? We're now finding, aren't we, that the state, the police, can monitor, pick up the online chatter and use it to their advantage. What's your impression of the development that we're seeing taking place?
The police can do that, and they've obviously put a lot of resources into it. I mean, there's a lot of material going about. For instance, the boys who were arrested in the northwest of England who put up these fake, you know, joke pages about organising a riot, the police had the pages taken down before the time when people were going to get together. So obviously they found it really quickly. So it's actually a mine of information. Personally, I mean, I think it's fine for it. I think it's all hyped up in terms of a story. It's the story of the year, isn't it? Everything that happens is because of Twitter, and as Jess said, it actually, otherwise it would happen any other way. And nobody had the slightest intention of closing it down. The reason they don't want to close it down or close access to it is because for the police and the government, it's such a wonderful source of information. There's millions and millions of people putting up stuff about what they're going to do. I mean, it's an absolute gift, a thing that probably the people taking part aren't aware of. It's just another part of the surveillance society. And to try to blame it for things is a complete blind, isn't it? I mean, it's a diversion. It's making people think differently about what it really is. It's a wonderful thing for people who use it. It's a wonderful thing for the state. And all the talk about closing it down is just nonsense.
Well, look, let's bring this discussion to a close. Let's go around our three contributors and ask them if they could look ahead. We've had an unprecedented experience with these riots in the sense that they continued for so long, they spread to other cities, they happened simultaneously. There is a big question now about how the news media should behave. Alex Pascal, have you got some advice for the media? Should there be a recurrence of this level of unrest?
I would preface this by saying the Starkeys of ancient Tudor times and the BBC is wrong to allow these things to inflame what has happened here in Britain. It would be wrong of us not to mention how this started, from the killing now of a man that we know. Other people would say, oh, what caused it? The Kirsty Wachs and the Guru Murphys, who are media faces that don't understand or want to understand the communities outside, have got to come out and understand it, in particular to understand how to deal with it on the media. We have to decide whether we want trial by media, trial by the police, or trial by parliament. Bring all this together. The debates has to go on and on. My greatest fear is what governments want to do again. Thatcher did it. And now we have Cameron wanting to do it. Clegg is pretending he's silent because he's guilty. And we have to now bring it out all, sit down and forget about whose height we are on. This is a country. It's a great country. It has allowed a lot of things to go on. And the only way Britain can look at itself and say we're a multicultural country and we want to show the world that we can do good things is to debate it and let the youth have a big, big, big say. And as they have their say, don't condemn them for even some of the words they may misuse.
Right. Some stern words there for television commentators. Jess Hurd, look at this from the point of view of photographers. You, as the chair of the London Photographers, have been at the forefront of this concern that perhaps the tactics of the police have often disrupted and threatened your work. If you could now use this occasion, what is your advice then, for example, to the police and to the media that employ you and use your pictures? What would you say should be the lesson of the riots of the summer of 2011?
I mean, I think clearly we're going to see situations like this again in the atmosphere of cutbacks and lack of education and... A situation where police kill someone in police custody once every week, apparently, for the last 40 years. We're going to see these flare-ups again. And for me, what is key is covering these events safely for our photographers, and we're going to be organising public order training for London photographers in the next month or so. So that's key for me in terms of safety and the... aligning us with the police. I'd say that our publications should not hand over our images, and that photographers should seek advice from the union if they are approached by the police for their own published work, and not hand them over, because we are not agents of the state and we should be seen very clearly on the ground as absolutely separate and independent news gatherers.
Well, Tim Gopsall, the last word. You, of course, I'm sure, would share Jess Hurd's point about photographers not handing over images. The same might be said for broadcasters. What do you think are the other lessons of the summer of 2011?
Well, of course, one of the things that the bad coverage does is it puts journalists in danger because it makes people angry. What the media should do next time around, in my view, is ignore what Kelvin McKenzie says and do some proper journalism. Proper journalism is listening to all sides, talking to all sides and putting them together. Of course we want to hear from the shopkeeper who's been burnt out and the family who've had to leave their homes and even the people who couldn't get home because the roads are blocked. But we do need to hear as well from the communities where these things are happening as to why. Otherwise it'll just keep on going on.
My father made a lovely statement. My father's statement is there are three sides to every story. Years, minds, and the facts. I hope it will come out.
Well, there we are. We've had some strong, stern words of advice to the media. I'd like to thank Alex Pascal, Jess Hurd, and Tim Gopsill. This CPBF podcast was recorded and produced by Claire Collie.